We're already 5 minutes late. Got a different man. Now, are we ready to start? There's a countdown on this keynote. It's a 15-minute keynote, so we've already lost a few minutes. Gives me great pleasure to welcome all the way from Australia, Dr. Susie Green, an international expert on coaching and positive psychology, founder of the Positivity Institute, and also she has been a Coaching at Work cover person. How about that? There we are. So straight away, over to Susie. You've got 15 minutes.
Thank you. How's everyone feeling? Had a wonderful day? Yes, fabulous. I'm so lucky to be here. Thank you to Stephen and to Liz. It's actually come about because another conference in Cambridge was cancelled, so that's why I'm here today. And I'm actually off the back of the European Positive Psychology Conference. Did anyone attend? Yay! Did you have a great time? The best part was they served champagne at lunchtime. We didn't have that here today, Stephen. Fantastic. But what a week. Well, actually, I've been gone from Australia for 2 weeks. I arrived here on the Friday, I think it was the 24th, to discover the results of and Brexit. Right now, many of you may know that in Australia, we don't know who's governing our country. We don't know who the Prime Minister is. I actually saw a post on Facebook recently that said that, yes, the UK and the US are in trouble, but the US has the Trump card. So I thought that's a good one too. So for me, I could talk till the cows come home about positive psychology. Could I just get a sense of what the knowledge in the room is? So if I asked a classic coaching question, 0 to 10, 5 to 10 is high levels of expertise, been, you know, reading about this field since it launched 15, 16 years ago. Who would say they're in the 5 to 10 at the moment? Please don't let modesty hold you back. Quite a few. And so hands up 0 to 5 on your L plates. Okay, fantastic. So you will be pleased to know that you can do masters in positive psychology. In fact, UEL now has a combined masters in positive psychology and coaching psychology, which is a world's first. And Clive Leach, my colleague, has been teaching on that masters recently as well. But you can also do MOOCs. Does everyone know what a MOOC is? Yep. Massive open online courses. So if you don't feel like you want to do a master's, you can definitely do a MOOC, and they don't cost anything as well. But it is a very large field. It's an umbrella term, so there are many different areas. And so you can start to see my challenge. I'll probably start to get the countdown shortly. There's so much I could say, but I'm going to do my best. So the company that I run is called the Positivity Institute, and we spend a lot of time talking about the F word. Does anybody know what that is? It's a positive psychology term. Flourishing, and I've actually heard it. Hedy used it this morning too, I think. So flourishing. What does flourishing mean? Well, I guess there's still debate at the moment around well-being, what well-being is, psychological well-being, what flourishing is. But the best, I guess, way to conceptualise it that I've seen at the moment is using the well-being and engagement framework. Has anybody seen this before, besides Clive and Angela? Yes, no? So it's off the back of Corey Key's work, but also Tony Grant did some development on it as well. So it doesn't just look at mental health on one continuum. It looks, I guess, as you can see, there, low mental health to high mental health, but it also looks at engagement, low to high. And so this graph is particularly relevant to coaches, I believe, anyway. So down in that bottom left-hand quadrant, that's probably more the realm of clinical treatment. My background, I worked for many years, I still am a clinical psychologist. And I think when I was preparing for this presentation, a lot of the work that I did were off the back of people having suffered traumas. So, you know, very reactive. And I guess what we're doing now in positive psychology and coaching is to skill people up and to coach them to be prepared to not just survive, but to thrive in a VUCA world. But most of the people that you're probably working with are down in that bottom right-hand corner. So they're actually quite engaged. In fact, I do a lot of work in education. There's a huge movement called Positive Education that is really, Australia's leading the world. I like to, a little bit of a little brag there, but it is now becoming a global phenomena. And this is particularly relevant in education. So I see lots of teachers that are highly engaged, find their work very, very meaningful. And I'm sure in other fields, health sector as well, similar, but to the detriment of their own well-being. You might also come across, Tony Grant likes to call them the plodders or the coasters, so people that have generally high levels of well-being, but they're not really engaged. And I was thinking about this too, perhaps when it comes to living in a VUCA world, it could be a sense of learned helplessness. I see a lot of that in the education sector, where people basically just think, there's nothing we can do, we can't change the system. And so they just disengage to it to a degree, or they just plod along, coast along. But flourishing really is the combination of high levels of mental health and well-being and engagement. So what's the current state of affairs? Has anybody seen this graph? This is from Cambridge, the Institute of Wellbeing. Professor Felicia Huppert, who taught at Cambridge for 30 years, she's an Australian. We're now very fortunate to have her back in Australia 6 months of the year, 6 months at Cambridge. And this graph, many of you will be familiar with these statistics, particularly around mental disorder. I did my homework on the UK, 1 in 4 people suffering a mental disorder. You may or may not be aware of another category called languishing, so not fitting criteria for a DSM-5 diagnosis, certainly not feeling good and certainly not functioning very well. The majority of people, this comes from a large US study, it was replicated in Australia with an adolescent population not so long ago, and the findings were similar. You'll be really pleased to know most of us are moderately mentally healthy. I don't know about you guys, but the older I get, I just think I don't want to be moderately mentally healthy. I want to flourish for the remainder of my life. Now, the curveballs will come. I'm flourishing right now. I have elderly parents. I'm prepared for some of these volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous situations to occur. But I'm hoping that with the skills that I have and the people that I've surrounded with myself with, probably more importantly, that there'll be less chance of me spiralling down and more chance of me continuing to flourish. So Black Dog Institute is a wonderful not-for-profit institute in Australia, and they actually use a fabulous analysis called We Feel Twitter analysis. And these were the emotions when the current Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, announced that there were no clear findings from the results and that counting will continue for a few days. You can see high levels of anger and fear, not much joy and love, but not relatively high levels of surprise. So these are, I guess, it's a great way to track emotions when these sort of events occur. I also found that they tracked the EU referendum. So this is when people were waking, when you guys were waking up on the 24th. Again, you can see lots of anger and fear and sadness, mid levels of surprise, but again, not much joy and love happening there. And in fact, this is exactly, as most of you will know, is what happens when we're in stressful situations, the fight flight mechanism kicks in. It tends to narrow our thinking down. In comparison to when we're experiencing positive emotions, that it broadens our thinking. It actually broadens our visual perception. So again, my argument to you is going to be, now more than ever do we need the science of positivity. And I've called it the science of positivity, not just positive psychology, because it encompasses complementary fields of positive organisational scholarship, appreciative inquiry, and of course, coaching. So VUCA, I won't talk too much because I know my time is running down, but again, all of these are very current and relevant right now for us. Life is not as predictable. I know my parents, you had one job for life, one marriage for life, you retired, you got a gold watch and you died, pretty much. Very linear. Now we're living in much more, I guess, circular or very complex situations. Most of you will be familiar with Stephen Covey's work. So I think often a lot of the work that I do is helping people differentiate what are the things that they can control, what are the things that they can't. But again, in organisations I work with, you find people getting into this learned helplessness. So you're sitting there as the high hoper, optimistic coach going, oh, you could do this, this and this. And you see it in action. Their thinking's closed down. They can't see those options. So again, the importance of us understanding the benefits of creating positivity as coaches so we can help people see pathways into the future. And yes, What can we control? I guess if there are things that we can't control, the one thing that most of us know as coaches is that we can control our behaviour and our thoughts. Not so easy, not always as easy as we'd like it to be. I guess it's encouraging that the complementary science of neuroscience is now showing that things that we thought couldn't be changed. For example, when I was first starting off studying as a psychologist, we were told personality was fixed, it would not change. We now, one of my colleagues just did a coaching study for a PhD showing intentional personality change through coaching. So again, working with clients, being able to, I guess, help them to see that there are things that can be changed, perhaps things that they didn't think could be changed. The model that I'm using, one that Stephen and I presented on in Australia, is the RAW model. Stephen says if you get it backwards, it becomes war. You're at war with yourself. So this is a model that I use in the work that I do in schools and organisations, the RAW model. So we use the science of positive psychology. My training program is based around these three areas. So it's the combination of positive psychology, coaching psychology. And for me, my background is a clinical psych, but helping people to learn, as I said, these skills more proactively. And I've been using the construct of mental toughness, which was developed here by Peter Clough, who's at Manchester University. Okay, so I also thought, can we reframe? One of my friends calls me the queen of the reframe. She said, if you ever need, you've got a problem or an issue, call Susie and she'll give you the positive reframe on it. So my positive reframe for VUCA is, how do we help people to be vital and vigorous, undeterred and unrelenting, creative and curious and agile and audacious? And a lot of that is based on what I've already started to refer to is broaden and build theory. Who is familiar with that theory? Could I get a show of hands? Okay, it's so important for you guys to go away and do a bit of searching. If anyone wants, please email. I'm happy to send papers. Barbara Fredrickson launched this theory in 1998. It's one of the key theories of positive psychology, which really is the foundation for the science of positive psychology in many ways. And her research has shown that just like negative emotions, which are essential for our survival, fight, flight, freeze, if you like, positive emotions are equally as important. And as I suggested at the beginning, probably even more important when we're under the pump. So by inducing positive emotional states, it expands our thoughts. As I said, our visual perception broadens, we see more. It develops physical and mental social resources, and it advances our personal growth. So a lot of this we know intuitively, but it's really helpful to know that there's a lot of science behind it. So I just wanted to talk briefly, I know I haven't got much time to go now, about vitality. Who has done the VR, the character strength survey? Okay, oh, a few people, fantastic. Can anyone tell me what their top strength is here today? Yes, no? That's just one of the challenges. It's just highlighted one of the challenges we have. It's one thing. There's over, I think, 3.5-4 million people that have taken the character strengths assessment. Now, it's a free assessment, but not many people can actually retain it or do retain or use their knowledge. That's one of the challenges that we're facing. It would be helpful after today to go away and have a look at where zest, energy and vitality comes on your VIA survey. It's one of my top strengths. It's also one of my strengths that is at risk of being overplayed. So we know that there is a dark side to strengths as well. But a lot of the coaches that I've coached in the past, and particularly people with depression, clinical depression, you will find that zest, energy and vitality is in their bottom five. So it's just an interesting one to look at. I also did some mapping out with a team in a financial services company in Australia, so you can actually map out the top strengths of the team. And this was a small team of 15. Every single person in that team had persistence as their top strength. And then we stood back and we looked at what's missing, and not one single person had zest. In fact, everybody had zest in their bottom five. And it was a big wake-up call to this team that it was time to back off a little bit and find ways to renew themselves. Many of you will be familiar with Schwartz and Law's work on energy management rather than time management. It's another great area that you can be looking at and referring to when working with clients. And the field of positive organisational scholarship, Professor Kim Cameron, is doing some wonderful work, particularly around positive energizers and using social network analysis to look at the nodes in the organisation. So the people that energise other people in the organisation, and then looking at how to strategically place those people across the organisation. undeterred. So again, coming back to the Via, where does persistence come in your character strengths assessment? Again, for me, it's one of my top five. Again, it's one that can be overplayed, that I really have to watch. Grit, although Angela Duckworth has been doing this for a while, there has been a little bit of backlash around some of her research recently. And mental toughness. Is anyone familiar with the mental toughness construct? A few people? Anyone using it in their coaching? I love it. It's scientifically sound. It's not a perfect instrument. No instrument is. But in terms of user-friendliness, clients can easily relate to it, and it's got a development arm, and a lot of the interventions are interventions used in sports psych or in clinical psych, but again being used really proactively. Looking at DC and Ryan's, who's familiar with self-determination theory? I would love to see every hand in this room go up. It's the absolute foundational theory of flourishing in addition to broaden and build theory. We're really fortunate to have DC and Ryan now out at in Australia part-time as well. So we need to look at our motivation to ensure it is aligned to our values, again, which is what Hedy was talking about this morning. And then there's a whole body of research under purpose and meaning. So when I first started to teach this at Sydney Uni, probably nearly, I don't know, close to 10 years ago now, there was hardly any research on meaning and purpose. Mostly I referred to Viktor Frankl's work. There was hardly any scientific research. Since that time, there's an emerging area. Michael Steger's one of the key people, and Todd Cashton, if you're wanting to look to see further on those fields. Curious and creative. So again, the research on broaden and build theory is that people become more creative when you induce them into positive mood states. So if we put half the room into a positive mood state and the other half into a negative, and we ask you to come up with a creative brainstorming task, the group in the positive mood state would come up with a statistically significantly longer list of ideas. So that's really important to think about when you are trying to look at options and pathways. Mindfulness. There's just so much research, it's really hard to argue with the research now. It's as much as a non-negotiable as exercise is for a coach that's interested in peak performance. And mood boosters. What are the mood boosters that you do in your practice, or I guess help your clients to teach to your clients? And I guess this also just briefly speaks to the point, as originally coaches meant to be more of a facilitation, asking rather than telling. I think now, given that we now have a whole body of science around flourishing and optimal functioning, from my perspective, I believe we have a duty of care to share that knowledge. Of course, it can be shared in a much more coaching approach, but there's so much that you can be drawing on to educate clients. Agile and audacious. Psychological flexibility is probably the key, and again, relies a lot on mindfulness, but there's a whole toolkit, if you like, from ACT. Is anyone using ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy? There's so many tools that you could help clients with there, particularly around cognitive defusing. So often you'll find people fusing with their thoughts and emotions. The techniques allow them to become mindful observers so they can choose, I guess, more consciously and mindfully about the ways that they want to think, feel and behave. And the other interesting point I want to make is around walking the talk, I guess. So it was interesting for me to be chatting with some of my colleagues at the European PosPsych Conference, and some of them were coaches. And when I asked them, you know, do you have a letter from the future, say, or what are your shorter term, longer term goals, and, you know, various tools that we use as coaches, but quite a few of them weren't using them for themselves. And I really feel that if you're going to be working with people, you need to be an exemplar. You need to be using these tools and using them on your own life. And in fact, in positive education, the model that we use in working with teachers is live it, learn it, live it, teach it, embed it. So when we take this out to the teachers, there's a very strong focus on them learning it and living it themselves first before they take it out to the students or embed it in the organisation. So finally, are you VUCA fit? So how well do you currently leverage the science? I know we're all busy in this day and age, Peer supervision groups is a perfect opportunity for people to bring journal articles to look at what's working well, perhaps what's not working so well. But what other ways can you continue to stay on top of the research? Perhaps consider attending the next International Positive Psychology Conference, which will be held in Montreal next June. And we do hope to see you in Australia one day too. We're having the 5th Australian Positive Psychology Conference in Adelaide in September. And thank you. Please don't hesitate to contact me if you want any more information, and connect on social media too. Thank you so much.
Well, I never thought I was going to meet the Queen of the Reframe today, so I won't forget that. Thank you very much for a very interesting and quite quick-paced synopsis of the positive psychology approach. Thank you very much. It's a small
thank
gift.
You, Stephen.
Thank you. It's my duty to pass you over to Liz Hall now, who's going to do a roundup, and award presentations. Yeah. And there's also drinks at the end as well. Over to Liz.
Thank you. So we have a date for next year's conference. It's the 5th of July, so I wanted to share that with you. You want to hold that date in your diaries. It's just been absolutely confirmed with the hotel. So I'm going to do some closing remarks in a minute, but I wanted to announce the winners of the prize draw. So I'm going to put the end to the suspense and let you know who's won. So the book Behind Closed Doors by Eric de Haan, which is gifted by Ashridge. The winner is Gwen Booth. Okay, so congratulations. The prizes are actually on the registration desk. Okay, so on your way out, when you get your memory stick with the slides on, what have you, you can pick up your prize. The Association for Coaching has a gift, and it's the Excellence in Coaching book edited by Jonathan Passmore. And the winner's Steve Ridgely. There he is. Centre for Coaching has given us the book gifted the book How to Deal with Stress by Stephen Palmer and Kerry Cooper. And the winner is Melanie Richardson. And also from the Centre for Coaching is How to Deal with Stress by Stephen Palmer and Kerry Cooper, and it's Nigel Cumberland is the winner. Coaching Supervision Academy, the book is Full Spectrum Supervision, edited by Edna Murdoch and Jackie Arnold, and the winner is Kathy Elan. Okay. Is that right? Is that your name, Miss Wood? It says Kathy here, so we'll need to check that. Is there a Kathy Elan or I think it's hard to read the writing. Could be you. We'll check after. Maybe Carol, maybe Kathy, we don't know. Hogan Assessments, it's the full lead series of Hogan Reports plus 90-minute feedback session. Caroline Lark has won that. Open University Press, the book is Coaching Skills by Jenny Rogers, and the winner is Sharon Collier. Open University Press again, Coaching Skills by Jenny Rogers, same book. Alison Spargo is the winner. Okay, so I just wanted to say, I just want to say what a wonderful day I've had, really. So I've been to lots of really interesting sessions. I've certainly got loads of food for thought for how we can continue to operate in these conditions. But I just wanted to really hear from you guys. I thought if I just take perhaps two takeaways from people. I think we've got a microphone there. So if someone wants let's say three people say what your takeaway's been today. Anyone want to put their hand up? There's a microphone here. Sorry. If you want to save your voice for the wine.
For me, there are a variety of takeaways, but I think one to encapsulate it all is enthusiasm and additional love and exploration for what I do.
Lovely, thank you. Two more.
So I nearly left at lunchtime because I thought if I go into the afternoon, I'll dilute everything that I learnt in the morning. Okay. So I felt really excellent at lunchtime, and I'm glad I have stayed, but okay. Do you know what I mean? It was almost enough this morning, so it's been fantastic. Definitely worth every penny.
Lovely, thank you. One more person?
I've met people again that I've seen before, so re-established connections and made some new connections, so that's been wonderful.
Lovely.
Lots of ideas. Thank you.
Thank you.
You very much.
So I'm going to bring the actual conference to a close, but we're now going to move into the Jinx reception, the award ceremony. So those of you who've signed up for that, we're going to do some jiggery-pokery with furniture and what have you, and so there'll be drinks and what have you, so that's what we're moving into now. Very exciting. Next bit of the day. Thank you, everybody. So we're opening the thing.